This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow, and we are barreling into the second wave of the coronavirus pandemic this winter. Everyone's lives have been upended, but working mothers have been shouldering a lot of that burden. 80% of the people who stopped working or looking for work in September were women, and that resulted in 865,000 women who left the workforce in September. That's a huge number. But our next guests say we shouldn't be surprised. The coronavirus pandemic hit working mothers particularly hard as families navigate childcare issues, virtual learning, and other unpaid labor. COVID-19 is highlighting what has been true for a long time. The U.S. economy never really worked for mothers. We're digging into the problems and looking at some solutions today with Catherine Goldstein, Shilpa Fadke, and C. Nicole Mason. Catherine is a journalist and host and creator of the Double Shift podcast. Hello, Catherine.
Hi there.
Shilpa, vice president of the Women's Initiative at the Center for American Progress. Hello, Shilpa.
Hi there.
And Nicole is president and CEO of the Institute for Women's Policy Research. Hello, Nicole.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. And we should note that our managing editor, Anita Rao, is the editor for the Double Shift podcast. So you are all working mothers, and I actually want to start by asking you how your families are doing and how you're managing in this pandemic. Catherine, let me start with you. How are you making it right now?
So, I mean, it's day by day, hour by hour. But for the most part, I think we're doing okay because we're paying more than a mortgage for childcare. I have twin infants and a five-year-old in kindergarten. So we're really in the trenches of very young children and, you know, managing childcare, virtual school, and, you know, it's a lot. And some days are fine and some days I want to scream.
Nicole, how about you? So this is a break for you being on the radio. Nicole, how about your family? How are you getting through at this time?
So I'm a single mother by choice to 11-year-old twins. And I am fortunate to be able to work from home. But the struggle between managing a really demanding career and job and helping my 11-year-old twins adjust to middle school and virtual learning has also been a task. And so I've had to bring in help to be able to support me as I try to make sure that they are learning, but also have their emotional and social needs met as well. And that's really difficult in this moment.
Right.
And, you know, so.
Yeah, no, it's a lot. And Shilpa, I'll ask you the same question and maybe turn it a little bit and ask what structures that your family has put in place to help you as you try to manage.
Yeah, definitely a patchwork. I have a 6.5-year-old and a 4-year-old. And, you know, I'm lucky that our preschool is open for now, day by day. Some days it's open, some days it's not. But we've been lucky that my son's been able to be in a micro pod at his local preschool. And then my daughter is virtually learning in first grade, and we've been able to share that with a close family friend who's a neighbor. So she and another first grader tried to do distance learning together, and we have a college sitter that comes in to sit with them so that my husband and I can work. But as everyone said, it's day by day. You know, one of our sitters was recently exposed to COVID, so she has been quarantining, and we have been doing the distance learning, while we were working, which is what I'm doing right now. My husband is tagged in, and I'm tagged out, so I can be here with you.
See, this is the actual meaning of the word problematic, which is to say that the solutions themselves create multiple problems. You get a babysitter to help you with the problem, and then you have to quarantine. So, and I just wanted to establish this because we're going to talk about your expertise and what you've learned generally and systemically, but you've all got a personal stake in this. So, Catherine, let's zoom out a little bit because we mentioned some of the numbers at the top of this segment. And you in particular say we shouldn't be surprised. What are some of the pieces of this moment that you think are most telling about the structure generally?
So I think a lot of people have been shocked by this number about over 800,000 women leaving the workforce between August and September. I really feel like I saw this coming a mile away because I think that the reason we're seeing such dramatic numbers at that time is because of virtual school. And I think any parent who's dealing with virtual school knows that it's essentially a full-time job. And there are all sorts of structures that have led to women being forced out of the workforce at this time. We hear a lot about the gender wage gap, but really the gender wage gap is actually between mothers and everyone else. And so if you're making a purely economic decision, not even based on gender roles, for someone in a two-parent family, for someone to leave the workforce, you're going to pick the person who earns less. So these were systemic inequalities that already existed that the pandemic has only made worse.
Nicole, the Institute for Women's Policy Research has been documenting and publishing stories of women who have suffered the consequences of this pandemic. What are some of the stories that you're hearing?
So we're hearing from women all over the country that they're hanging on by a thread. Many have been unemployed for weeks on end, and there's no work in sight. So many of the jobs that have been lost are in sectors that were dominated by women, and many of those jobs are not coming back. So we are hearing stories of women struggling to take care of their families, you know, out of work, housing, food insecurity, and just having to make these difficult choices and decisions about being able to provide for their family or to earn a living. And that's just a really impossible situation for many working families and mothers.
Shilpa, Vice President of the Women's Initiative Center for American Progress, Center for American Progress. You know, a lot of people have been calling this a women's recession, in particular using the term dropping out of the workforce. And I wonder how you receive all of that.
Yeah, well, we're lucky. We actually have Dr. Mason on the phone with us, who actually named it the She Session, which is the term I know I've been using a lot. This is not surprising, right? Women are at this intersection of these two huge shocks, economic shocks. Women are overrepresented in these occupations that have suffered the most, care work and this face-to-face service sector, right? And many of those jobs are held disproportionately by women of color. So these women of color, you know, face these disproportionate jumps in unemployment. These gaps are growing over time. And so whether it's the push of the job loss or the pull of the care at home, right now we're really on the brink of losing a generation of women's careers.
Yeah. And Shilpa, let me just stay with you for a minute, because it really underscores the fundamental problem of our political economy from the start for the past 500 years, which is it refuses to value the domestic work, the work of creating and nurturing and bringing families to fruition. And if you don't pay for that, you get that free labor, which is what capitalism requires, a certain amount of free labor, then it becomes really easy to build in some of these injustices. As you say, then at that point, they get baked in. I just wonder if this is a revealing moment for that, or if it's concealed by the pandemic. Shilpa, let me put the question to you.
I think it's broken open. You know, I think the structures that have failed us for many, many years, the intersection of racism and misogyny and the combination of the lack of valuing care, the pandemic has just broken that open for the world to see. And I think this strain is just, it's falling so heavily on women. It is not surprising. But it is, I think it's front and center for anyone that's paying attention. This recession is going to be different than any other we've ever had before, right? This is a service sector recession. Women and women of color are going to be disproportionately harmed. And if we, don't really think about big, bold change right now, this is going to be a long-term problem.
Well, let me ask Catherine about that, too. We'll talk about some of the long-term changes that you envision. But I want to take a look at the way we're envisioning this right now. It has broken open. It has revealed the systemic injustice built into the system. But, Catherine, you also take issue with the way we're characterizing this, saying that women are dropping out of the workforce, for instance.
Yes, I have a big problem with phrasing this as dropping out, because dropping out is a phrase, I think, that really emphasizes personal choice, personal responsibility, and it highlights the idea that someone who drops out is someone who lacks grit, determination, hard work, and that's absolutely not what's happening. In America, we see motherhood as a personal project. We don't act like this act like society or the government or partners or employers have any obligation to help families. And so we see what's happening in these huge huge systemic ways. we see that through the lens of like you personally couldn't make it work. And so I think dropping out is a really inaccurate term to describe what's happening, and I think is really negative towards people who have no choice at all. I think forced out, pushed out, thrown out of a window, all of those are much more accurate descriptions of what's happening to women who oftentimes are being forced to give up careers that they've spent years and decades building.
All right, well, we're going to take a break right here and talk some more about that and look at potential policy solutions that may address both the acute problem and some of the systemic issues that we're raising here today with my guest, Catherine Goldstein, Shilpa Fadke, and C. Nicole Mason. Catherine is a journalist and host and creator of the Double Shift podcast. Shilpa is vice president of the Women's Initiative at the Center for American Progress, and Nicole is president and CEO of the Institute for Women's Policy Research. And we're going to continue this conversation on the state of things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Stay tuned. This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. The coronavirus pandemic is exacerbating the struggles working mothers have had in the U.S. economy for years. Today, we're looking at the problem and also some possible solutions with three guests: Catherine Goldstein, a journalist, host, and creator of the Double Shift podcast; Shilpa Fadke is vice president of the Women's Initiative at the Center for American Progress; and C. Nicole Mason is president and CEO of the Institute for Women's Policy Research. Nicole, you've said that the economy never worked for women. What do you mean?
When I say the economy never worked for women, we see it right now. And the pandemic has brought into focus a lot of broken systems, mainly the care system in the U.S. It wasn't working for many working women and families, and women have had to just deal with it. We've treated, like Catherine said, childcare or mothering as a personal obligation, and childcare as a personal responsibility. Rather than a public or social good. And so when the pandemic happened, we saw many of those systems fall or break apart. And now we're in a moment where there's an opportunity for us to imagine systems and institutions that work for women, and also a workforce that encourages, provides support for working women. Like Catherine said, it's not voluntary. When women off-ramp, even when they have kids, they're making a choice. Sometimes it's a choice that they are begrudged to make, choosing a career that they love and meeting the demands of motherhood or caretaking. And that's a choice we don't ask men to make, and we shouldn't be asking women to make.
Shilpa, I wonder, because these are certainly issues that we have been talking about in one way or another for a long time. Child care, the idea of unpaid labor, and, you know, pay gaps between men and women. These are not new conversations. How did we get here? What have those conversations, created some level of progress that we can build on, or are we more or less starting from scratch?
I mean, you know, most people that study this issue would note that America is an extreme outlier when it comes to, for example, work-family policies. You know, we're one of the only countries in the OECD that doesn't have paid family leave, for example. You know, where before the pandemic, you had almost a quarter of mothers going back to work less than 2 weeks after having a child. And that's in the richest country in the world, right? And so I think, of course, you know, we were not in good shape before the pandemic. There has been a lot of progress in states, for example, and cities. And I think we're at a point, you know, before the pandemic, I would say we were at a point where on both sides of the aisle, there was an understanding that we needed to make progress on access to childcare, on paid sick leave, you know, bolder policies that really center good jobs for women and what that looks like. And I just think the pandemic right now is putting this really, you know, front of mind. I mean, right now, I think anyone, all of us know, if you have a school age child, we are hanging on day by day, week by week, month by month. And so we need action now, right? We need to be able to contain the virus. We need to do things like expand unemployment, make sure we're spending on food security and housing, get that state and local aid to governments around the country, you know, to get the economy back on its feet. But the bigger pieces that you were asking about, you know, the bolder long-term policies like paid family leave, access to child care, fair scheduling, those really need to be at the top of the agenda right now.
Well, Catherine, you've been talking about these problems for years on your podcast, Double Shift. Does the pandemic shift the conversation at all? I mean, there's two ways that a crisis can affect a policy crisis like this. Number one, it can raise our attention and spur us to action. The downside is we're so overwhelmed with the crisis that we never get around to it. And I wonder what conversations you're hearing and whether or not you think this will really be the prod to action.
I think it's a continuum. I think that this is a very important moment in the conversation. But I think that there's a few things that I think make this different. I think if we do not address the care crisis, there will be no economic recovery. I believe the Center for American Progress has noted that we're at risk of losing 50% of all childcare slots in America if we don't sort of get a federal intervention on childcare. So the economy can't recover until we look at how broken our care system was and has further become. And I think another big difference that I'm seeing is that because these issues are breaking into larger economic issues and because fathers are also being more affected, I think we're more effectively making this a man's problem, and therefore there's more potential for there to be change rather than this being placed on individual women to figure it out. Men are starting to wake up to these realities as well.
Well, Shilpa at the Center for American Progress, tell us more about the longer term consequences, or maybe you could start with the short term, just the economic consequences of this. And then in the long run, if we do or do not address the systemic problems.
Yeah, the childcare example, I think, is a really good one. You know, the crisis facing the childcare industry right now is going to leave lasting scars. I think we've lost close to 20% of all childcare jobs, and many of those obviously are hitting women and women of color. You have childcare centers reopening at lower capacities, right, to maintain social distancing and some other issues. So they're just scraping by. And childcare is an industry where profitability was, you know, in the best of times, challenging, right? So you have, you know, childcare workers, largely women of color, whose work is consistently undervalued, that are now taking on these additional health risks without additional compensation. So what I'm worried about, and I think everyone should be worried about, is what it's going to look like when we get to the other side. when everybody's ready to, you know, go back to their office and they go back to their childcare center and it is not open, what will that mean? You know, what will that mean for, you know, women's employment moving forward? So we are at a moment right now where we have an opportunity to make those investments to stabilize the childcare market. And it's up to us to act.
Well, won't those positions open up once there's a demand? I mean, isn't that the problem? The problem, no demand now, or it's difficult to make it work because of the restrictions. Once that's gone, we'll see those slots open up.
Well, I mean, I think that assumes that those centers are available since they open in some way, and that once it shuts down, it's easy to pull it all back up. Mm. I think we have this assumption that that's how it works. Those workers might move. I mean, there's just a lot. There's a lot to think about in terms of what that infrastructure looks like.
Nicole, the Institute for Women's Policy Research just released a report about how to make a gender equitable recovery. What are some of the solutions that are outlined in that report?
So we've been hitting on a lot of them, or talking about a lot of those solutions and strategies. And one of the biggest ones is care. And when we talk about focusing on infrastructure, there will be, I believe, a bill or a robust recovery package that will come out in the beginning of the year. And we need to make sure that a big piece of that is around care and building a solid care infrastructure. Because we know that if schools are not able to open, daycares are not able to open, women will continue to exit the workforce, and we're not going to be able to revive our economy in any real way. You know, the other thing that Shilpa mentioned was about the disproportionate impact of the pandemic on lower wage workers and women of color, and those women were employed in sectors that have few benefits and health care and health insurance. And so, again, making sure that we, you know, have paid sick leave, paid family medical leave, and absolutely higher wages so women are able to take care of their families. That's, you know, we have in the report, we outline a robust set of policies that taken together will make sure that women are able to advance in their career, have mobility, but also are able to take care of their families, even if they cannot in this moment re-enter the workforce.
I want to ask a tangential question here that kind of takes an even sort of now we're at, if we're at 30,000 feet now, I want to go up to 60,000 feet and look at it even a bigger picture. Shilpa, maybe I'll start the question to you. You know, absolutely, women should have access to all of the best jobs and all of the jobs that are available, and they should have it at equal pay. One of the things, though, that gets sort of overlooked in this is that that then assumes that there will be two workers in the family who are going to go out and earn an income. And we've actually gotten to the point in the United States where you almost need to have both parents, both members of the family working to earn a living. And you wonder if you have to have an economy that pays so low and has so few benefits that makes us the hardest working, you know, nation on earth, that we have the fewest days off, we have the least vacation, and all of the modern conveniences. So you wonder if all these labor-saving devices have actually made our lives better since we work so much. So this is a much deeper question, but and a much harder structural question to answer. But are we paying people enough? Are we really offering the kind of remuneration that we should for the work that's being done in our economy? I know it's a big question, a little perhaps off the target, but Shilpa, let me put it to you.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think that families are being squeezed. They're being squeezed at every possible, you know, side. They are working harder than ever. You know, people always talk about whether their mortgage is higher or lower than their child care costs. Wages have not kept up. That's why, you know, you've seen so much grassroots mobilization to raise the minimum wage. And, you know, we should note that almost two-thirds of minimum wage workers are women. Part-time workers are women. I mean, you know, there's just, I think it's time to rethink, you know, what does a modern workplace and modern workplace standards look like? It certainly doesn't seem that if you work 40 hours a week, but you are still in poverty, that's not a livable wage, right? So I think it's time for a real conversation about what does it mean to make a living wage? What does it mean to have modern workplace standards, not perks, right? Having a paid sick day to go to the doctor is not a perk of a job. It's not like, I saw once on a list, you know, there was a list of perks and it was free snacks and then sick days. You know, we have to really change the narrative here.
Yeah, that's my point, is that if you work a 40-hour week, we've actually come to accept the fact that you can still be in poverty and work a full week. And maybe it's time to actually critically think that that's not right. You know, something's wrong with an economy that actually allows that kind of thing to happen. Two 40-hour workers can...
It has real consequences. It has consequences on our health. It has, you know, when you think about the rising and skyrocketing costs of healthcare, the number one reason most families go into bankruptcy, the rising student loan debt. You put it all together and families are just being squeezed in every way. And I think it's really up to us to demand change and to think about what a modern workplace does look like.
Catherine, let's talk about some the ways in which public policy plays a part. You've said that cash is a great solution for families right now. How would you like to see the government work cash payments?
So I think that cash is the fastest solution in this sort of crisis moment. And there's a lot of, great research on guaranteed income that actually says that that is more effective than all sorts of other bureaucratic public policies. I think the government should be paying parents who are conducting virtual school for either to help with additional childcare costs or, you know, reduced productivity on their own jobs. I live in North Carolina. I received the $335 check for, you know, virtual school costs, which is basically a total joke considering how much money we've had to spend on childcare since the pandemic started. You know, those kinds of token things don't actually make a big difference. I think we need to really I think we also should be paying parents, you know, paying parents to stay home and to do virtual school. I think we should be paying all sorts of workers to stay home so we can close more things and get the virus under control. I mean, getting the virus under control is the number one thing that will help our economy. It'll help mothers, it'll help families, it'll help everyone. So those I think are some really good things, but I think longer term thinking about guaranteed income and an income floor could make a really, really big difference for families.
Nicole, I want to give you a chance to respond to any of that, but also ask you what responsibilities for this economic recovery you think do fall to the federal government, to the state government. How much of this is going to be a real policy question?
So I just want to start out by saying that I do think the federal government, as well as businesses, have a role to play in this recovery, but also thinking about higher wages and the kind of policies and practices we will need to ease the economic burden on families in this moment. The other thing I want to say is that there are a lot of households today that are not two-parent family households. There are households, especially Black and Latino households, that are headed by single women or single women mothers. And those women, when they lose their income, they have zero income coming into the house, and many of them haven't been impacted by job loss or layoff over the last recent months. And because of pay inequity, earn lower wages than other workers. So so the issue is really complex, what we know from the women that we speak with is that, who are the primary breadwinners in their families, they are bereft and are without income, are wondering where their next meal is going to come from, and there is no help coming from the government. I do believe that there will be a sizable chunk of women, for whatever reason, caretaking demands, will not be able to reenter the workforce. So I do think, guaranteed income, economic impact payments over through this economic downturn or recession is going to be really important and critical for families.
Talk about the compounding effect of that kind of vulnerability, Nicole. You talked about people, breadwinners who are one paycheck away. And when we talked about childcare, if they close, they might not reopen. It's not that easy to get started. For a family who may be facing eviction or who has been evicted, who has suddenly had a catastrophic illness with nothing to fall back on, talk about sort of trying to dig out from that once you're cast into that kind of milieu.
And the other thing is that's really important is that, the social safety net has eroded over the last couple of decades, and that's just not for lower wage workers, but for everyone. And in this pandemic, in this moment, we're seeing middle-class families also, at rope's end in terms of their economic security and vulnerability. So I think in general, we do need some solutions. Both Catherine and Shipla have both said it really well. We are the richest country in the nation, but, workers and working families are struggling in this moment to make ends meet and have no lifeline. And so beyond the numbers, listening to the stories of women and families is critically important. And while there's bickering happening at the federal level, we're missing the fact that many families are still struggling.
Well, I want to get a sense for how you think this might turn out. Shilpa, let me start with you. Are you optimistic that we might actually see some meaningful change come out of this?
I am. I think this is, the first time we've really heard resounding chorus around valuing care work and really understanding what's happening. But I think, it's also time for Congress to do something. I think, many people have heard that a lot of these provisions that have sort of been band-aids over the summer are set to expire at the end of the year. And so as we have, workers facing these elevated levels of unemployment and uncertainty, all the moms and women who are really, their participation in the workforce is depending on childcare and schools being open. And we see the coronavirus cases skyrocketing. So I think, I am optimistic, but I am also anxious for congressional action here.
Catherine, what about you?
I totally agree. I think the time is past time for there to be some real federal action. And again, the CARES Act and some of the provisions were band-aids on a bullet hole. And I think that, again, we also have to look at our, priorities as a society. Many, many states are looking at further lockdown measures to get the virus under control. But, many, many places, including here in Durham, the restaurant, there's indoor dining, which is like considered basically one of the most dangerous things you can do. And our public schools are not open. So as a society, we've decided that, you know, the direct sort of capitalist enterprise of a thing like a restaurant is more important than getting our children back in school. So all of these things have, I think we're going to be dealing with the consequences of these priorities, honestly, for decades to come, if we don't sort of prioritize the health and safety of our families and our children and the well-being of and employment of mothers.
I want to thank all of you. I'm out of time, but Catherine Goldstein, Shilpa Fadke, and C. Nicole Mason. Catherine is a journalist and host and creator of the Double Shift podcast. You can find the third season now wherever you get your podcast. Shilpa is vice president of the Women's Initiative for the Center for American Progress, and Nicole is president and CEO of the Institute for Women's Policy Research. Thank all of you for joining us today.
Thanks for having us.
North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.